You are listening to The News Project for the week of August 5th, 2019, brought to you by GNAT TV. This week's episodes feature stories about: with taxes rising, the Londonderry Select Board discusses the idea of having a local option tax. There is new legislation and state money to encourage municipalities to tackle building up their broadband capacity.
Discuss local option tax. From the pot to the fire, right? Okay, who would like to open that discussion?
Which discussion is this? Oh, I'm sorry, I was focused on something else. The local option tax. So I was in a local business establishment about 2 weeks ago, and the business owner asked if she could express a concern, since I'm a select person. She asked if the town had ever considered adopting the local option tax, and this was for her in response to the recent increase in the town tax rate. And she asked if I would look into that. So I went and spoke to Tina and Kelly to try and get a little more information about that to see if it had been considered before. They didn't think that it had been. And so we did a little bit of research just to bring some information to the table to just start the discussion. That adopting the local option tax would be a way to defray some of the tax burden from residents slash homeowners onto people who, you know,
the greater population,
you know, other people who come and spend money in Londonderry. So I thought it warranted discussion. Tina and I sat down and looked at figures for sales in Londonderry, which are handily posted on the tax department's website, and came up with a loose calculation, a ballpark, if you will, a dart thrown at it. That given the retail sales, rooms and meals, we couldn't find alcohol sales and use tax, totaled up to somewhere around $17 million, and 1% of that would be about $170,000, which is not insignificant.
What other towns have that? I think Manchester does, right?
Manchester does. I probably have a list here of the towns. Brandon, Brattleboro, Burlington, Colchester, Dover, Manchester, Middlebury, Wilmington, St. Albans, South Burlington, Stratton, Williston, Wilmington, Windhall, and Winchester.
I just remembered something that might be relevant to the numbers we were looking at.
Yep.
A couple of weeks ago when the BBC folks were here and there was some discussion about money that's generated in the area, and something that the Stratton, the corporation of Stratton, because they get their mail out of the South Londonderry Post Office, somehow gets like mixed into our area's numbers in a way that might be skewing them in a certain direction.
17 million sort of sounds like it.
Right, it's quite
it sounds like a lot.
So, yeah. And I don't know what you would find if you got more precise information, but that might be a factor in the numbers.
Right.
What Windhall collects, what they budget for local option tax. They budget $1.1 million of revenue for, wasn't that what it was?
Yeah. That's their 1%.
That's the 1% option. So I'm thinking Stratton's in theirs.
Well, some of theirs are
right.
tremendous amount of business there, I mean, would not necessarily be the corporate portion, too.
Yeah, right. Right. And it was just the corporate portion that someone from BDCC brought up that somehow stratified
economic census.
Right, yeah. And
because of their South Theory options.
Yes, and I don't know for certain.
Right. Well, I think bringing this up tonight was a way to start a conversation.
Right. To gauge
whether there's any appetite for pursuing that,
in
which case there would need to be more research done, and Tina thought that it would probably be very helpful to have someone from the tax department come and talk.
Yes, definitely. But that just occurred to me that there was some discussion.
I have one question. Would the rooms tax include Airbnb? And any other of those
rooms? It does. They do have tax.
Technically should, but not everyone. Well, Airbnb collects
sales tax.
Rooms and meals. And sends a lump sum payment to the Vermont Department of Taxes, but it's not broken out by individual. So I don't know if there's a way of tracking what portion of that is coming from people in Londonderry or South Londonderry, but I do know
Esther sent out something a while back about Airbnb taxes.
Yeah.
I don't remember
and,
what
and
was
Airbnb
in it.
Airbnb is a platform that does collect the tax.
But,
not
correct.
All short-term rental platforms like Airbnb do the same.
But even with Airbnb, would there be any way we would get that 1%?
If there's a way to track that it's coming from people in our town?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I think there
whether
is.
Whether that is the case or not, I'm not sure of. And there are certainly people that are operating in such a way that they're not collecting or paying that tax.
I
think VBR is not paying this like VBR.
They, as a platform, should be asking the people who are operating on it to be collecting that tax, but it's each platform operates differently. They should be.
My understanding is that aside from the this tax that you're talking about across the board within the town, that the Airbnb is a totally separate tax that you can elect for Airbnbs, and it will be collected.
No,
that is my understanding.
You know what? That sounds familiar.
That was
to me,
something
Bob.
Like that in that thing Esther sent us, but this was I can't even tell.
And that was also coming from realtors because that at least the individuals that I was remember getting
types
information.
Of rentals that.
But it applies to Airbnb.
It applies to you differently. Short-term rentals are treated differently than long-term.
Well, I have kids at Airbnb, and I know I'm quite sure that they have that they're in communities that have a tax, but not necessarily 100%.
I know this. The tax form has all the terms with the
right.
Who has the motion tax? When you send it in, you're supposed to put your tax there, so.
Right. But if you're operating on a platform that doesn't track any of that. Yeah.
Is there a means for the town to request the state any of that money they collect and gets put back to the individual towns that it came from? I mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding.
The state is currently trying to wrap its head around the short-term rental conundrum that they have. because there are regulations that are already in place, it's just a matter of and having the resources to
enforce. How do they enforce
that?
It? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm curious if it's just it's gonna be another
place.
Enforcement thing. How do you
it's an enforcement. It's having people check them out.
I only brought it up because I only bring it up because if we're going to do it on the motels and inns around here, we should most certainly do it on short-term rentals.
Right. Absolutely.
So we have to get to a place where there's a means to enforce it on Airbnbs before you can enforce the things that are easy to enforce it on.
And once again, I think that it becomes a question of what are you talking about for revenue? to me in terms of my particular interest in it. Our business, I mean, any construction we do in Londonderry, if Miles delivers to Londonderry or anybody, any of the suppliers, you know, from Ludlow and the Valleys or W&W, it's 5% because Londonderry doesn't have it. But if we're building something in Windhall, they charge us 6%.
They ask you the delivery address and apply it.
They apply it to a delivery address. So you'd be adding 1% to all of the construction projects in Londonderry as well.
But do they actually pay that 1% back to that town?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So there is a means of enforcing that.
There is, because when you submit tax form, you have to...
Yeah, it goes back to the town of Windhall in Bonneville.
So obviously, if there's an interest in pursuing that, there's a bit of research that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole question with the Airbnb thing, there's a lot of conversation going on about that particular thing too. So that will probably resolve itself almost. It's sort of being dealt with on a completely different platform as well. So when that gets answered, it could answer our question accordingly.
So the question is there interest on the board to pursue this at this time?
I would say if we could find real numbers that we know are correct, maybe then we could discuss it.
That's the key. The interest would be, in my part, would be based on that. My inclination, my own personal inclination, is not so supportive of it because we're economically disadvantaged. I don't know if it's much of an advantage not having a tax, but at the same time, it is an added burden. And if it's a substantial amount of money that really makes a difference in the taxes, then it should be considered. But if it's studied and it's proved to be a minimal amount of money, then I would be going, is it worth it?
Mm-hmm. Well, we could make the motion to pursue it in the sense of gathering more information about it.
Correct.
That's not necessarily pursuing in terms of putting it in place right away, but
I think possibly a more accurate number of what it might look like, and then also the effect that in our budget,
right.
What the benefit
Absolutely.
Or back to the people paying that tax, what that return might be.
That's a good idea.
Do we just table it until we have further information?
$100,000 is too.
Well, I think we could make a motion to pursue.
Yep. It's what?
Gathering that information.
It's not insignificant.
Yeah, right. And it's the municipal rate for everybody. It's not just residents. It's second homeowners pay the same municipal rate as people who live here. So it's everyone's kind of in that boat together. It's not the same as the education rate.
So I guess
can you fix that problem?
Me alone? No, unfortunately.
So I guess the question to the board is, should we do further research into the potential impact of a local option tax?
Sounds like there is a sort of agreement with that.
Pardon?
I said it sounds like everybody might be in agreement with that. Maybe not.
Yeah, I guess. What was it you said, Doug?
Gathering some more information.
Gathering more information, yeah. Okay.
Leave them alone, it's a
birthday. I would imagine some of the other towns that have done the work already probably have a spreadsheet ready for you to plug numbers into. Mm-hmm. You know what? You don't necessarily need to reinvent the wheel here.
Yeah, Windhall might be a really valuable resource.
That could be part of this process, is talking to some of these other towns.
It might have been Manchester.
I'm sure.
Today we're looking at Manchester.
Our economy and Windhall's economy are tied together.
tied
very closely aligned.
A little more than Manchester.
Slightly different retail.
Yeah.
So is this something we would put Shane on the case of, or is this something that I should work with Tina on for the research?
I think you and Tina make a great pair.
And my first step is back. Yeah.
So you've got all kinds of time then?
But she just comes with the candy. She buys the candy.
Would somebody like to make a motion to proceed with some fact gathering? Wherever you'd like.
I would make a motion to pursue more information on the benefits or options with a local option tax.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Shortly before the state legislature adjourned last spring, the House and State Senate agreed and passed legislation designed in part to give a boost to providing better broadband internet service to those parts of the state considered underserved. Today, that's usually defined as areas that have less than 25 megabytes per second of download speed and 3 megabytes per second of upload speed. The broadband bill, as it became known, allows municipalities to enter into public-private partnerships with private internet service providers, allocates $700,000 to help municipalities plan broadband build-out, and raises $1.5 million annually to subsidize internet service providers to expand infrastructure in rural areas, according to VT Digger. The statute was an effort to respond to calls for upgrading the overall quality of internet service across the state, which is fairly uneven. That was the main agenda item for a conference held at the Mount Snow Ski Resort last November, where business leaders and state officials discussed ways of upgrading internet speeds and making service available in the more rural parts of the state. Counties with large towns, such as Chittenden County, are in pretty good shape, state statistics show. Almost 94% of the county's residents get at least a 25 megabyte download, 3 megabyte upload level of service. But it's a different story in Essex County, up in the Northeast Kingdom, where less than 21% of the residents get the 25 and 3 level of service. Caledonia, Lamoille, and Orleans counties are also among the counties where barely half their populations get modern-day broadband speeds. Bennington County is not the best, but it's not the worst either. About 80% of the county theoretically gets the 25 and 3 speed, but that still leaves a substantial number of residents underserved, more than 1,000 of them, according to the state. Representative Laura Sebelia, whose district includes the towns of Dover, Reedsboro, Stamford, and Wardsboro, has been one of the legislators in the forefront of efforts to improve broadband service in Vermont, and we caught up with her recently in Jamaica for a conversation about what the new statute will do.
So this bill is really intended to empower our local communities to solve the rural broadband problem and to ensure that we have a means of getting to the last mile in terms of connectivity. So we certainly have been struggling with that. Folks are frustrated by that. And it's been my sense that there's an expectation, irritation, frustration with a lot of the national providers that they are not making it to the last mile. And the fact of the matter is, there's two things here. The last mile just is not profitable for the national providers. And the regulations are set up such that the state and local areas are preempted from we're federally preempted. So we cannot make these large national for-profit providers cover the last mile. That's been a reality for quite some time. What's been newly emerging is starting to understand what's happening with our copper landline system, particularly in some of our more isolated parts of Vermont. That's really the only communications that these communities have. And that copper landline network, in places where there's competition for telecommunications, you know, when you have cell service or you're able to get voice over internet with a cable or some other fiber connection, folks are dropping their landline. I bet you many viewers here have dropped their landline. And that's fine. What's happening, though, is there are some folks that cannot drop that copper landline connection, and so it's becoming more and more urgent for them, and there are less and less people supporting that legacy system. which is deteriorating. And there are not investments being made in it because there's less demand for it. So nationally, we're even seeing that a lot of these traditional landline providers are starting to negotiate with the FCC about when and how they can shut down those networks. So we take that with folks who are frustrated that they can't get the internet. We're federally preempted from making the providers provide it. And we've got a growing sense of urgency in rural Vermont about providing an alternative means of telecommunication, looking at these copper landline networks. So this bill, as I said, is really intended to give our municipalities, our rural communities, hopefully working together and not individually, hopefully forming these communications union districts. It's meant to empower them with the ability to get support for a plan, like how will we do this? What is the technology that will work in our towns? How many people will we need to cover? Who wants to be covered? What is the topography? What's the right technology? Do we have the right partners available for us? Are there partners from out of the area that are willing to work with us? How will we pay for this? What are the financing models that make the most sense and that our town can support, or our towns can support?
Another new wrinkle is the communications districts, which can now be formed when groups of towns organize themselves into units to build network capacity. That's what's happening up in the Northeast Kingdom, where, again reported in VT Digger, the three least well-served counties are forming districts to go where the private sector companies won't, because stringing wire to every last mile simply isn't profitable. Another area that many Vermonters are all too familiar with in terms of spotty service is cell phone coverage. Shaftesbury Select Board member Tim Scoggins has been driving the back roads of Shaftesbury trying to get a handle on that, and here's what he told us a few weeks ago.
Yes, we picked up on the news that Corey Chase at the Public Service Commission, I believe it's Public Service, had been doing this mapping for as an effort to sanity check the provider maps that are used to decide whether or not an area is served or underserved for cell phone service. And he had very cleverly put together a bank of six cell phones, each one serviced by a different service provider, and had driven the major roads in the state to map cell coverage. And I spoke to him and found out he was very eager to see the fine detail filled in, to have more of the state driven than he could drive himself. And we were eager to do that here in Shaftesbury because mapping cell phone service is something we've always thought would be a good thing, but was never something that was within our capability. So it's average, I guess, for Vermont. It's like anywhere else. There's, good spots and bad spots, but certainly everybody knows that there are places in town you just can't get a signal. I know where the dead spots are on the roads that I drive, and of course it varies from carrier to carrier. But yeah, it's not what people in the big city are used to, which is being able to use their cell phone anywhere. Certainly it's the case that in areas around here and certainly all over Vermont, there are certain areas where you can use a cell phone.
Can you hear me? Isn't leaving the state vocabulary anytime soon. But it may be that with all the attention being paid to it, things like broadband and cell phone service may be poised for at least a bit of an upgrade. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.